Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
So according to the Commonwealth, the majority of Massachusetts women work outside the home, with just over 60% in the labor force as of 2017. Only now, in the midst of this global pandemic, many of them are working in the home. And even if they aren't working in the home, the kids are in the home, school is in the home, family members who need care and attention are in the home. And it is proving to be an impossible bind, one that the data shows that women face more significantly than men. And fall, promising little relief, with the majority of the state schools returning at least partially online, and 30% going fully online at the start. And we just heard from Carrie Young that the pressure is on to increase the amount of time kids are spending learning at home. There are real costs to this crunch for income, families, career, relationships, mental health, and we want to size that up now. And let's talk about what needs to be done. So share your experience. How has the pandemic changed life for you as a woman or a mom, or for women in your life? What's it been like managing work and responsibilities at home? Call us at 1-800-423-8255, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us for this conversation is Mara Bolas, Associate Director of the Women's Economic Rights, Gender Justice, and Inclusion Hub for Oxfam America. Welcome, Mara.
Hi, wonderful to be here.
Glad to have you. And also with us is Tanya Del Rio, Executive Director for the Mayor's Office of Women's Advancement. Hello there, Tanya.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you both. So let me turn to the two of you to paint the picture for us. What is happening for working women during this pandemic? Mara, why don't you start?
So my fear is that during this pandemic, we are falling into accepted patterns that women should shoulder the continued uncertainty around school and daycare availability. Women traditionally have been seen as the default providers of care for their families. This is work that is invisible and that is assumed. The coronavirus pandemic has made that work fantastically visible at this point. And now it's up to us as a society to see how we're going to support women and position them for success. And if we don't, I think we're going to see widespread attrition of women from the workforce. And that's already happening, right? In April alone, there was research from the National Women's Law Center that showed that the entire prior decade's workforce gains were lost in April alone. And this is happening globally. This isn't just happening in the US. This is a global problem. So it's really the time to show leadership within our companies that employ women workers, within our households in terms of men chipping in, within employers supporting men to be doing more around the house, and within our government agencies to be allowing for paid leave for all, flexible scheduling and other benefits that are going to make this work for women to stay in the workforce.
And Tanya, what are you seeing and hearing in terms of how what Mara was just telling us about is manifesting in people's lives?
Yeah, I think Mara is absolutely right in the phenomenon she's describing, and we are worried about it at the City of Boston as well. Women have carried an outsized share of the burden, and in this recession, I mean, I guess it's different than what we have seen in past recessions because it's affected women's more. In the past, like in our last recession, we saw men's employment being more severely affected than women. And that's not what we're seeing now. We're seeing larger impact on sectors that have high female employment. And also we have women being more exposed to the health risks of COVID because they are disproportionately represented in essential worker categories. So it's having a large impact also in that way. As far as, you know, school and childcare closures, Mara again is absolutely right. this is an expectation that's placed on women that is just overburdening them. And we have seen both in larger research globally and national, but also in the research that we've been conducting with Boston residents through focus groups, that caretakers are really in a no-win situation because their employers seem to have an expectation of similar output in terms of work as pre-COVID, but they're providing really few to no accommodations for employees who have children or caretaking responsibilities for an elder family member or someone who's sick. And at the same time, these caretakers who are, again, mostly women, are fearful of losing their jobs. So they're trying to keep their work output stable. They obviously have a larger responsibility now with caretaking. And so what gives is their own well-being and their mental health and the amount of sleep that they're getting, you know, like really human basic needs that should be covered. And that's what people are sacrificing.
Tanya, thank you. And I want to bring in another voice into the conversation now. We've got Mykia Kursky, who is a single mom from Dorchester who works in homeless services. Mykia, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you heard, you know, Mara and Tanya there. What have things been like for you as a single working mom since March?
It's been very overwhelming, really trying to navigate through this pandemic with two kids and work. I actually have to go into the office. It's been very hectic, just trying to figure out how to do things.
So as a mother of two school-aged boys, how have you managed it?
Well, through the help of my church, The Table in Dorchester, I've been able to, one, get prayer and support through them, my friends Sassy and Patricia. And then at one point when it was still very overwhelming, I decided to send my children to my family that live in Maryland. They stayed there for 2 months just so I can kind of get a breath and try to bring some sort of normal to my life and to their life during that time.
How did that feel for you, and how did the boys react to that?
My oldest son was actually excited about it because we weren't doing anything. They weren't going anywhere. They were really stuck in the house. I would have people come to them. My youngest son, he cried the first day, and I was really emotional, but I knew that this was the best plan for us, not only for my well-being, but for theirs because of I'm working in the shelter. I was really hurt about it, but at the same time, I had to really have some grace with myself and understand that I needed to do what was best for me and my sons at the time.
And Mykia, I know the boys are back, so now that summer's over, new school year's right around the corner, what are you going to do?
My oldest son, I'm comfortable with him being home and being able to do his schoolwork remotely. My younger son, however, I don't know what I'm going to do yet. Again, some of my community from my church family, The Table, they're thinking about starting a kindergarten program. So maybe I can send him there for 3 days. And he did get a seat with BPS for kindergarten or K-1. But I'm not sure. There's no real plan for BPS yet. So, I mean, I did just hear you guys say that the teachers are rallying now to not have kids go to school, which I understand. But if they're not, for people like me who are essential workers and have to go into the office and may not have full community or full family here, there has to be some other options. I do know, I also looked at to Boys and Girls Club. They're offering a program they have BPS seats, but they're charging for it. So I don't think it's fair to have to come to work and then pay for my son to go to school where he actually has a seat in another school, you know? So I don't have a plan yet.
Well, Mykia, I'll be thinking about you. Mykia Kursky, a single mom from Dorchester who works in homeless services. Thanks for taking the time to tell us your story. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Mara, back to you. We're talking about serious issues around childcare and probably issues that have been structural for a long time and are exacerbated now, right?
I mean, Mykia's story just is everything to me as I've been doing this work. The kind of central protagonist in my mind is the essential worker, single mother who's really left on her own to patch things together for themselves, to provide, you know, the subsidy to our economies and our societies, which has been invisible for so long, and now try to figure it out through a patchwork of means. And it shouldn't be on Maikia. Maikia should be left to do her essential work, and she should be supported by employers and politicians who make this tenable for her, so that she isn't put in the impossible position of choosing between earning an income or potentially neglecting her child if she can't work it out on her own. It's just completely unacceptable.
Let's go to the phones here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to tell your story like Maikia told us hers. We've got Rebecca on the line from Cambridge. Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Berry. I'm an owner and a principal at a small architecture firm. And I just want to add that I really think that this conversation is needed, because I think this is the untold story of the pandemic, and that I fear that we may see setbacks to women in every line of work out of this whole thing, and that we really have to find a way to support women in every profession through this.
Rebecca, if it's not too personal to ask, do you feel like you're being set back in a way here?
Well, so from my perspective, it's really hard because I have worked my way up and I'm an owner at a firm now, but I have two small children, and I have women in the firm that I want to sponsor and I want to promote. And it's really tough to watch all of us go through, you know, losing sleep, you know, restructuring things, feeling like we're trying to be a half of a teacher or a whole teacher sometimes for our children, while we're still trying to do our jobs that we have spent so much time, you know, working on and devoting ourselves to the profession.
Rebecca, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. And we'd like to hear more stories like Rebecca's, like Maikia's. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Tanya, I don't know about you, but hearing Rebecca talk about that struggle really resonated with me. As a working mom, sometimes I feel like I can't do anything as well as I want to. How do cities show up for women, help with these networks women we're talking about, help someone like Maikia solve this problem and not have to pay sort of double? How do we do that?
Yeah, that's such an important conversation. I want to thank Rebecca and Maikia for their calls. I mean, something that Rebecca brings up is that this impact could last a lifetime. And it's true, because the research has found that if a woman steps out of the workforce or reduces her time and goes part-time, it reduces not only their earning potential for years to come, but also their work opportunities. It's been shown that it's hard for them to even come back and find a new job. So that's something we're watching. So as far as the city, the approach is multi-pronged. Like, we're doing as much as possible. I would start with our work with childcare providers, who are those essential workers that are enabling kind of everybody else to do their work. So we launched last year at a program we're calling the Childcare Entrepreneur Fund, where we provide cash grants, but also business skills workshop for women in Boston who are providing this service. And it's in this year we scaled it up, and we got the money out the door as fast as we could for this program, so that we could maintain the supply of childcare slots that had been declining in the last years in Boston sharply. Thankfully, at least for family childcare, we're seeing that slow. But now with the pandemic, we're very worried about these, they're small businesses, about them even being able to survive. So we're scaling that work up. Also, through the Boston Resiliency Fund, it's raised $32 million by now, and it's awarded $25 million as of a couple of days ago. And that fund directly provided Boston's emergency childcare programs money to ensure that families of essential workers in hospitals, grocery shops, all of those people who we really needed to keep our society going, had free childcare available to them through the quarantine. And so it's just a taste of what we've been doing. Mm-hmm. Because it's an urgent situation, it's a sector in crisis.
And just to clarify, the Resiliency Fund is a fund that the city of Boston started early on in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Tanya. I want to turn back to Mara for a minute. Mara, recognizing there are fathers who are in this situation and there are single fathers who are struggling as well, but the data does show that this is a situation that disproportionately impacts women workers, whether they have kids or not. So what do men need to do in this moment? Because this is going to have economic impact on all of us if we can't figure out how to fix the structures that are being exposed as so many other things are by this pandemic.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of bring in a little bit of my own personal story for illustrative purposes that, you know, we're two working parents with school-age children. They're older, so that makes it much easier. And I think an aspect that's been absolutely critical is A, the fact that we can work from home, right? And that's a privilege that isn't afforded to many Americans. Only 20% of Black Americans, less than 20% of Black Americans and Hispanic Americans are even able to work from home. And another critical aspect is that our workplaces have been tremendously accommodating and understanding that both my husband and I are juggling or not. I've never been made to feel that I'm underperforming because I need to take time out to care for my children. And importantly, neither has my husband, right? What we've seen in the research that's done by Promundo, which is a masculinities organization that's expert in masculinity studies, is that men often don't take the workplace accommodations that they're afforded because they're worried that they'll be penalized by their employers and made to feel that they're not serious about their jobs. So men need to help, but employers need to message the flexibility and the empathy that's so required during this time in order to allow them to do so and do so successfully.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to grab one more call here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Jennifer on the line, and I'm sorry, I'm working from home and my monitor's small, and I can't see where you're from, Jennifer. So tell me as you start your comment. Thanks.
Thank you. From South Hamilton. I'd like the conversation to include the effect on girls and boys, but especially on girls, of watching their mothers struggle and likely fail on many fronts and how that may affect their decision-making regarding careers and parenting in the future.
Oh, Jennifer, that is a gut punch to think about daughters perceiving this that way. Tanya, what's your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the boys and then get to the girls. We do have research that shows that when a boy is part of a household where there's more equitable distribution of household tasks, they do go on to be more likely to marry or form a relationship where that equitable distribution of tasks remains. And so essentially that just shows that people are raised in a certain way, and then they go on to replicate that when they grow up, which obviously is important if we're seeing some of that break down, right, because of COVID. I just wanted to echo what Mara said earlier, because it's such an important question, and if I'm not asked it, I just try to answer it anyway, and it's, what can men do? And so I normally like to say that we call on men who are in heterosexual relationships to take on more of the work in the private sphere, housework, care for children, care for elders, because this frees up women to engage more fully in their pursuits, especially professional ones, and how leadership at the institutional level is so important. So in our case at City Hall, we have Mayor Walsh making these explicit invitations, inviting their employers to take advantage of all the resources that are being made available to us, from like mental health assistance through the employee assistance programs, but also tools for managers to tell us that we need to adjust these expectations and essentially act like the employers that were just talked about, with understanding and with compassion, and understanding that this is an unprecedented situation. And then just to conclude,
I'm going to cut you off there, Tanya, and I do apologize to Jude. I know you have a lot of important points to make, but we do have one more caller voice I would like to bring in here. I think it'll add to the conversation. We've got Kathleen on the line from Newburyport. Kathleen, go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to add the perspective of a former legislator, and I chose pre-COVID to step away from elected office. I served in the Massachusetts State Senate, because I sincerely felt like I had to choose between doing my job as a legislator or being present for my young son. And viscerally, at the core of our society, there's a systemic bias against women. I don't care if they're nurses, teachers, dental hygienists, or elected officials. We need more women in decision-making positions of power, because the whole idea that the daycare centers were going to be left to scramble was completely predictable. And there was a vacuum when Main Street was lobbying and small businesses were lobbying and big business got subsidies. What about the daycare providers who needed that funding, because the cost of childcare was already unaffordable and they were already doing the good work to be present? There was a complete care and priority.
I'm going to take it back from you there, and that was really helpful to the conversation. Mara, we've got about 2 minutes. I want to give a minute to each of you and Tanya. I heard you reacting there, so let me have you go first.
I'm going to say that as a nation, we undervalue care work and economic decision making. And this was evidenced by the fact that the entire childcare industry in this nation got less CARES Act funding than Delta Airlines.
Okay, well, that's kind of a drop the mic moment, isn't it? And Tanya, Tanya, how about your parting thought?
I will follow it with the call for action, because we call on everybody to value the work of women of color, especially those who are performing care work. Their contributions are so significant. I dare say our economy rests on their backs, and their compensation does not reflect the value they're creating. So we thank Senators Warren and Markey for their support of critical legislation like the Child Care is Essential Act that would right this wrong that Mara mentioned. And it already passed the House. So we urge callers to let the senators know that we support this, and that we should provide $50 billion in funding for this industry. It urgently needs it.
Okay, so what a great conversation. That's Tanya Del Rio, Executive Director for the Mayor's Office of Women's Advancement. Thank you. And Mara Bolis, Associate Director of the Women's Economic Rights, Gender Justice, and Inclusion Hub for Oxfam America. Thank you, Mara.
Thank you.